Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Good evening and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts for this weekly journey through all things fermented. Every Monday night, live at 7 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network, and we're archived on this HeritageRadioNetwork.org as well as iTunes.
That's right. And what's happening this week, Mary?
I am teaching a beginner homebrew class at Brooklyn Kitchen tomorrow night at 6 p.m. I don't know if there's any slots open, but if you're interested in learning how to homebrew, this is a great place to do it. It'll be the last class until the fall. So,
speaking of homebrew and homebrew places in New York City, I have a beer coming out next week also, our first in many collaborations I've done with the homebrew clubs and stores around. First one was with Benjamin and Danielle from Brooklyn Homebrew, and we did an American wheat, a hopped up American wheat. We're launching next Tuesday at 508 Gastrobrew. If you're in town, come through.
Yep. You're also going to be launching the blonde, right?
We are launching a blonde that I did with Jim Barnes, right, of Shelton Brothers and Pretty Things, or formerly Pretty Things, next Tuesday. And tomorrow, actually, another collaboration done with Larry and Paul of Spider Bite Brewing Company. We're doing a black wheat saison. Anyway, lots of fun. I love working with other people.
Yeah, those get kicked off at like 5, but 6 is a good time to come. And then Chris plays afterward from 8 to 10 in a jazz four-person, what do you call
quartet.
It?
Quartet. It's a quartet. Yeah, we are a quartet today in this studio.
Yep.
Tuesday is Tuesday, by the way. That's why we do our beer events and the music on Tuesdays. By the way, Tuesday is Tuesday. Anyway, I'm very, very, very excited about today's episode. Here we are with two amazing people who are behind one of the most amazing expressions of awesome that have popped up recently, and that is Torst in Greenpoint. We're here with Brian Ewing and Jeppe Jarnit.
Hello.
Yeah, exactly. You did
good. Oh, thanks.
He'll teach you how to say Taurus later, too.
Oh, wait. Is it Taurus? I know. That's
do you have a long time?
Every time, we're just going to pause and look at you, point at you, and then you can say it.
Trust.
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 Oh, that was pretty good.
Trust.
I always tell people to say it really fast.
Trust.
Trust.
All right. Awesome.
I still haven't said it right yet, so it's okay.
There's time.
We gave up.
Time. I don't think it is in threat of falling down. And that is because of both of you, and everybody who's involved in this project just have amazing backstory. So what is Torst? We could either start there or we could start at the beginning on where you guys kind of, what you do individually. You both have very interesting stories outside of Torst. Did I do it right?
We do.
Yeah, we do, I think. If you're into beer, at least. Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you're not into beer, we're really, really boring.
All right, well, let's start with
how. Me, dude.
That's right.
All right, well, I'll start asking a question from how I know you guys. Brian, I first met you when you started 12% Imports
right.
In New York City, and you came and you served some of these beers from places I've never even heard of at the time. And what is 12% Imports? What is your philosophy behind it? Yada, yada.
Well, so, yeah, started 12% a little more, about 5.5 years ago. And started it, super, super small. Just as a pretty hardcore beer geek who is into a lot of stuff from Europe specifically. For years, gone over, to Belgium and Scandinavia, and a bunch of, basically beer hunting, along my travels, probably visited, well over 100 breweries over the course of 5 or 6 years of active sort of beer geek, beer hunting travel. obviously along the way, you tried a lot of, you know, mediocre stuff or whatever, mm-hmm. but also came across some really special things and, you know, looked into what it would take to, you know, actually bring them in legally as opposed to, you know, stuffing suitcases full with them and, you know, trying to sneak past customs and stuff like that. Researched it, decided to give it a shot. Invested my life savings in a container of beer and brought it over and, you know, tried to sell it out of the back of my Prius.
I remember that. Yeah.
That's how 12% started. We've moved on to a proper delivery vehicle.
In the beginning, you were just bringing it here for New York City.
That's how we started. Yeah, we started just in New York City.
I remember meeting you at beer table five and a half years ago. And when you got your importer license, that also allowed you to distribute it within the state. Is that correct?
That's not right. Actually, no. We got the import license, and then we were faced with the decision of, do we go the traditional route, which is just import the beer, and then and obviously find distributors to sell it once it gets here, or do we want to go a step further and try selling it ourselves? And I guess my feeling from the very beginning was, although it was going to take more time, more capital, you know, all of that, decided to do the self-distribution thing because I just didn't think that for these brands that no one had ever heard of, few people could ever pronounce them, you know. I mean, like there was no brand recognition there, you know. So I felt like they had to be hand-sold. You know, you needed to tell the story behind the brewery to effectively, you know, get that product in the hands of people that would be excited about it, and you know, that kind of thing. So we took an extra 9 months once we got the importer's license to get a New York
distribution license,
and so we did that, and you know. Yeah, we're still doing it. I think it was it's a decision that, you know, I felt right for me. I mean, you know, it's, but it by no means, you know, I mean, there's some great distributors here in New York City. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever.
But the beers that you got were not here yet.
They were not
had
here
nothing
yet.
To do
no.
with that, but yeah. Somebody had technically to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, so that's how we started a few years back, you know, sort of like I said, literally just delivering beer at, you know, as a part-time thing. I would do my day job, which had nothing to do with selling beer at all. And I would come home and, you know, I would do sales calls and, you know, do deliveries out of the back of the out of a Prius. And that's how it went. But, you know, people seemed to like the beers. We started getting calls from all over the country about, hey, how can I get this in California? How can I get it in, you know, Philadelphia, whatever? And so we just sort of slowly expanded from there. And you know, word got out. People really liked it. And we brought more beer over. And it just kind of, you know, it grew very organically that way. And then the other thing that kind of happened to really help our growth and to get us to the point where we are today it was that our reputation amongst brewers overseas, you know, as a legitimate, you know, importer, you know, somebody that really cared about the brands and promoted right. them well, and that started to happen too. You know, the craft beer world is a very small, sort of tight-knit one. You know, everyone knows everyone kind of thing. And once we actually started doing this and actually being very successful, you know, being successful doing it, you know, there are other breweries that we were very interested in talking to that other folks were interested in talking to too, but that made the decision that they wanted to work with us. And that obviously helped us quite a bit too.
And now you said you're in 30 states, around 30 states?
Yeah, just about 30. I don't know the exact number, but roughly 30. Yeah.
And then how many breweries did you bring over in the in your first container?
It was six breweries from Belgium.
And how many do you have now, about?
About 20.
Okay. About 20.
Yeah.
From Belgium and also?
All over. Mostly European, but we also now distribute a couple of American brands throughout the country through our distribution network. You know, Canada, the UK, Scandinavia. Yeah.
So a little bit all over.
All over.
Cool.
Yeah. All over.
How did you meet this guy?
This guy?
This freaking guy over here. Hey.
A friend, actually, a mutual friend from Chicago. I was traveling in Denmark a couple of years back. I don't know, maybe 3 years, whatever it was. And a mutual friend from Chicago, who's also in the beer business, who's said, you guys really need to meet each other, whatever. And so, you know, my wife and I were in Denmark, and we were going to go to McKellar Bar regardless. And so she set up a meeting, and Jeppe's wife convinced him to go. And we met each other, and he had really just started Evil Twin Brewing. I mean, he'll obviously jump in here, but at the time it was a very, very small thing. It had just started. I didn't even know that he was really, you know, doing it. I thought we were just kind of meeting to hang out or whatever. But when he told me about it, I got very, very excited, and I thought we got along really well right away, similar personalities or whatever. So we just started talking, and I said, hey, I'd love to do this. And he made it happen. And, you know, that was before I even, you know, tried his beers. I just had a sense, you know, that they were going to be great. And then so he came over to visit, you know, a couple of months later, stayed with us in Brooklyn, brought his first couple of beers. They were out of this world good. Soft Dookie was one of them. Yep. And before, during, and after Christmas.
How can that
be good?
That's not how can that not be good?
Exactly. And
Best Dookie is a fluid
before,
one.
Before, during, and after Christmas was the other one. And we were already going to do it at that point. But once I had tried those beers, I was like, this is going to be. Yeah. This is going to be what this is the future of our this is our future is working with this guy.
So Evil Twin Brewing Company, Jeppe, first of all, thank you for opening and doing all that. Your products are awesome, and your names are a lot of fun.
Yeah,
always. I've read a recent article where you talk about how you love the name part, and you know, the process doesn't matter as much. I think this is not a direct quote, but you said the process was just the process, but it's not nearly as important as the result. Or like, you know, just drinking it, and you don't care so much about the process, just having it right. True. My favorite, and I'm jumping the gun here because I do want to ask you and have you be talking, not me. But one of my favorite stories that I read recently was how you tried to make a chili beer, and you know, it wasn't as chili as you wanted, so you threw hot sauce in it, and you got it to where you wanted. You're like, screw it.
It actually came out really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I get asked that question a lot, and. For me, it matters what you actually drink, and I know a lot of brewers are into the whole process and how you do it and using the right ingredients and all that, but you know, it all comes down to what you put in your mouth and if it tastes good, right. and it smells good, and every time I make a recipe, I always have the final result in mind, so I always think about how the beer is going to end up, and that's what I work for, and it, you know, it seems to be working pretty good. Yeah. It's actually the true story. I was doing this chili beer for a festival in Denmark, and I did it the right way. I had some fresh chilies and boiled them and all that, and it just didn't taste too much of chili. So I took Dave's Insanity hot sauce, put a couple of drops in, and it came out. It was good.
I mean, Mary and I, we are strong advocates of spiking your beer after fermentation process because you have the control in order to get that. You know, if we're going to talk about technical process, but you have the control at that point to really dial that in when things didn't work on the other side. But you had been, before starting Evil Twin, you'd been homebrewing roughly 10 years.
Yeah, I started homebrewing, I think, like in the late 90s, like. Very late 90s or early 2000, I can't remember. You know, I was living in Denmark and had grown up on Carlsberg pretty much, and thought it was boring to drink Carlsberg all the time. So
right.
We started a beer club and, you know, started home brewing and tasting each other's beers and liked what we did and took it from there. I didn't do it. I mean, it took me about 10 years to actually start brewing on a commercial base or whatever. But I had all the beer projects going on in the meantime, and I wasn't thinking about selling my beers, but
right.
You know, so yeah, that's the story. I started a long time ago and had opened a bottle shop in Denmark in 2005, started an import company in 2008, distributing all over Europe. That's which good. You can do that in Europe. We don't have any three-tier system, so it's not a problem. And then
so you can personally deliver from.
I mean, you can have a retail shop, and you can have a distribution company, and all that. So yeah, and then I had the distribution company, I had the retail shop, and I was home brewing. So I was like, why not try and actually sell some of the beers I do? So that's kind of where it came from.
Now, how big was your system when you first started? How big of batches were you brewing?
I mean, I at home I just brewed small batches, like 5 gallon batches, mm-hmm. but then. Having been in the beer industry for a while, I knew a lot of brewers. So when I wanted to try it out, I contacted some of my friends and asked them if I could make a batch. And I was like, yeah, why not? Let's do a batch. Soft Dookie was actually the first one I did at Amager, and that was like an 8-barrel 8-barrel batch or something. Just did it, put it all in kegs, send it out in Denmark to different bars and to see if I got some good ratings. And yeah. I actually got some really good ratings. So I was like, you know, why not? When I met Brian, I think my total production before I met him was 20,000 liters. it's pretty small, 500 gallons.
Yeah. Thank you. I needed that conversion at the end.
And with that, we're going to take a break. We will be back shortly with more from Brian and Jeppe.
On Food Man About It.
This special program was brought to you by TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving creative professionals at all levels, from individual customers to Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation in their expertise in technology, sales, and service. Visit them on the web at techserve.com or in New York City at 119 West 23rd Street. Learn more about their in-store classes and incredible insider program. Make stuff happen. TechServe.
Yes, make things happen. Welcome back to Food Man About It. We're sitting here with Brian and Jeppe of Torst and of 12% Imports and Evil Twin Brewing Company, respectively. What is Torst?
It is a beer bar in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, specifically. It's something that Jeppe and I have long sort of talked about being a part of. Back when we first really started working together, we had this idea that we really wanted to open, or at least be part of opening, a seriously world class beer bar, and specifically wanted to do it here in Brooklyn. There are a lot of There are a lot of hurdles to doing something like that, obviously. But we kept at it, fortunately an opportunity came up through a mutual friend of ours, Daniel Burns, who is the partner owner of Chef, mm-hmm. And sort of presented us with this opportunity. So Torst is opened as a beer bar, but Daniel, as the owner, is also working on the kitchen in the back, which right. will open, I think, towards the end of June. Right. Operate under its own name, actually. But anyway, the concept behind it when he came to us with the idea was it was going to be a strictly beer place, and so that's where right. kind of Jeppe and I came in, and so we kind of jumped on it, and we cultivated a beer program through all of our all of our resources and all of our connections, from Jeppe being a brewer and a distributor overseas to me, being a distributor in New York City and an importer and having access to all these incredible breweries. The two of us, just put our heads together and tried to create, what we thought would be the best, singular beer program possible.
And I think you've succeeded. The result is a place that's just a place by beer nerds for beer nerds. I mean, it's not exclusively for beer nerds. Right. Like it's just
it's
one
accessible
that,
to anyone.
Yeah, cool. There are so many things that are done right, in particular the flux capacitor. What is the flux capacitor?
Flux capacitor is in Jeppe's, in my opinion, it's the best draft system that exists today. And it was built and designed by a crazy friend of ours. His name is Gabe. He owns and operates Beachwood Barbecue and Brewing out of there are two locations now. The original was Seal Beach, California, and the other is now in Long Beach. That's where the brewing is done. So that's an example, you know, of what I'm saying. Yep, and I kind of calling on all of our resources. So I had met Gabe through 12% Imports when we were, you know, distributing our beer in California. I had met Gabe, you know, several years ago, and he, you know, when I met him and we were, you know, drinking beers and sharing everything, and we were getting, you know, 12% beers at his Beachwood Barbecue locations, he shared with me this crazy draft system that he had, which had, he called it the flux capacitor. He built it himself because he was frustrated with the limitations of, you know, other modern draft systems. And basically the gist behind the flux capacitor is that besides looking super cool with all these fancy red lights and everything, it has it's every line is individually regulated, okay, but it goes a step further. Every line has the potential to change to five different gas blends. So you can go full on CO2, you can go full on nitro, and you can go three different blends in between, with the ultimate goal being that you can pour virtually anything, but also pour virtually anything so that it's consistent from the first you know, glass that you pour to the very last, and that's the basic concept behind it. It also allows us to pour beers at you know, control gas so that we can pour beers at the right temperature. You know, so when we have, you know, big massive or imperial stouts that are on, you know, that Yep and I have on the menu or whatever, or barley wines, whatever, those kinds of things that really shouldn't be served at, you know, 36 degrees, right, where you're muting all of the, you know, sort of these, you know, flavor components. We have, you know, we built the second walk-in into the place, and we have, you know, a handful of lines dedicated to that warm room that, again, Yep and I will send in beer over there, and it'll, you know, you're going to be able to have a 12% imperial stout served at 55 degrees. You know,
and that's where you keep your warm room at 55.
About that. Yeah. And so that's the concept of the flux capacitor. You know, but again, it was one of those things where we called Gabe, you know, and said, "Hey, Gabe, Yep and I are going to be doing the beer program for this bar that our friend is opening, and it needs a flux capacitor. Will you come out?" And he'll hire you. Don't worry about the cost, but will you come out and do it? Right. And Gabe said yes, very graciously.
And how many lines are you guys pouring?
21. So the
perfect number.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So yeah, we've got 15 in the one room and 6 in the other.
The warmer room.
6 in the warmer room.
Yeah. It's actually 14 and 7.
Is it 14 and 7?
7.
Today.
There you go.
Very
you go.
Cool.
Yeah.
And they range in alcohol strength as well, the lightest being your bikini
beer 2.7, and the strongest one we have had on was Mega Growler at about 14 and a half, but we always have beers on at around 12%.
So
you know, there's something for everybody, and of course, as you start out saying, lots of beer geeks likes to come by and and get all geeky about it, which is fun, and I like to talk to them. I'm still a beer geek. But we also have a lot of just local people that have heard about the place and want to be educated and want to come by and, you know, try something new that they haven't seen before. And that's the thing. You know, we've been able to present a lot of beers that people haven't seen before. New York, for being such a big city and being pretty much like the center of the universe, or the capital of universe, a lot of good beer bars too. It's kind of limited what is actually brought into New York. So there's a lot of bars actually, you know, show the same beers. And and because of my connections and Brian's connections, we've been able to showcase some stuff that you haven't seen before, like Beachwood Barbecue, for example.
Exactly.
That's, I mean,
and the goal, yeah, the goal, absolutely, as Yepa says, is to have some of the most amazing beer on, but also with deference towards things that you're just not going to see every day, you know? So we really try to always have some incredible, but also, you know, sort of eclectic and rare things.
Absolutely.
At the place.
Yeah, but it all comes down. It all comes from, you know, there are so many beers that are really, really good, but you can't get them. So it's not that we just want to show something rare. We want to show what's good.
Exactly.
Or rare and good. So,
yeah.
You know, there's, when we taste Beachwood Barbecue out in California, we're like, we want to drink those beers in New York also exactly because right. it's so good. So that's mm-hmm. why.
Yeah. You know, yeah. yeah.
What are some of the more eclectic beers that you've had for inspiration for homebrewers that might be listening?
Like flavor-wise.
Yeah, flavor-wise. I mean, you guys do a lot. You have had some with, you know, Brettanomyces or some funky
sure.
stuff and
sure.
some very interesting spices.
I mean, we have
spices,
I made a series of beers in Denmark a long time ago. Not that long ago. About a year ago called Danbik. It's mm-hmm. Spontaneous fermented in Denmark, actually. So... We just did it as a fun project. We made four barrels, four wooden barrels, wine barrels, and aged them, fermented them like from the yeast in the air, which mm-hmm. you normally do in Belgium, but you can actually do that in Denmark also. It's just going to turn out different.
Would you recommend that here in Brooklyn?
Yeah, why not? I mean, you can definitely do it. It will probably turn out different, but you can definitely do it. So we did that and added different fruits. Those have been at Tørst or some of them, so there's more to come. Rhubarb is coming, and nice. Gooseberry, I think. Yep. So yeah, so those are definitely some special ones. We also have right now, for example, we have a Berliner Weisse on from I don't remember, but it's imported by Bee United, and it's aged on a barrel
yes.
like the Sittemore.
It's one of those yeah.
things, and it's really it's good. Yeah,
has the what's the homebrew scene like in Denmark?
Very small, but Denmark is small in general. We're right. only 5 million people. It's been growing the last 10 years, but it's, you know, when I started homebrewing, I didn't know anyone else doing it 10 years ago. I mean...
So you started that club?
Yeah, it was kind of freaky to homebrew, and my friends were like, what the hell are you doing? But, you know, it's definitely growing. Since I don't live in Denmark anymore, I can't really say how it is now. But it's been growing, and it's beers are getting more and more popular in Denmark also.
You moved here to Brooklyn officially, right?
Yeah, I did a little over a year ago. Primarily because, you know, I wanted to try something new. And I had started working with 12%, and we had a really good relationship going on. Started selling a lot of beers, and... I actually found myself lacking capacity in Europe. We could sell more, but I couldn't brew it because all the breweries that I used were already
busy.
Brewing to
yeah,
capacity.
Sure.
So, you know, they were like, when I got a batch, I had to take it right away and figure something out to brew. And prices were really high because of that. So, you know, when I started to work with Brian, we started selling more and started to look towards the U.S. in terms of brewing over here. It just made a lot of sense for me to be here. And we have two breweries now, one in South Carolina and one in Connecticut.
Fantastic.
That I make a lot of beers at now, and it works out really well. So, you know, it means we can put more beers on the market and also at a better price, which is...
And in different packaging.
Different packaging, yeah. The place in Connecticut that we started up with in January has been a, you know, kind of the big project for this year, and it's been great. And yeah, we've got Evil Twin Brewing beers now in 4-packs throughout in New York State and all around here. So it's been great. Yeah,
4-packs of bottles.
4-packs of bottles. Yeah,
and cans,
right?
And
cans.
Yeah,
cans too. Exactly.
How long ago did you come out with cans?
The cans came out about a year ago, maybe
a little less, like
September.
Something like that.
Yeah. That was done. That was done at the brewery that we work with, Westbrook in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And they, totally flew off the shelves. We've got more cans coming. They'll probably be out late July, August,
cool.
something
Very
like
cool.
that.
For
yeah.
summer.
We have two beers coming out in cans: Hipsdale, which is already out, and Bikini Beer is coming out in cans.
Oh, great!
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm planning a few more.
You said that's 2.7, right?
2.7 IPA. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. But planning a few more in cans because cans is just a cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I love all of this. I'm really excited about Tørst getting food in there, especially because you guys do things the way you do. It's with that it stands to be an incredible gateway for food lovers and people who aren't really that hip to beer just yet. I think that that's going to do remarkable thing for that.
So if people want to visit Tørst, there it's in Greenpoint. It's what's the closest subway stop?
It's the Nassau stop off the G train.
It's
a half block
right
there.
Next to it.
Yeah. You could walk from the Bedford L too. It's not
Absolutely.
That far.
Yeah,
so
it's like 10
if you know if the G's not running or
yeah.
whatever.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's very easy to get to. It's a cool place.
Open every day from 12 to 12, Thursday, Friday, Saturday from 12 to 2. So. Plenty of time to drink beer.
Yeah.
We will see you there.
Yeah, we want to thank you guys so much. We also want to thank you guys for listening and remind you that Heritage Radio Network is a not-for-profit, member-supported station. So if you like this show and any of the other shows on Heritage Radio Network, please support them by becoming a member. And of course, for you homebrewers out there, members of Heritage Radio Network get 5% off at Bitter and Esters and Brooklyn Homebrew, as well as $1 off of draft beers at Jimmy's number 43.
That's right.
So thanks for listening. Next week at 7.
We will have Stephen Durley and Haley Jensen, two of our favorite local homebrewers and
award-winning homebrewers.
Award-winning homebrewers. You might have seen their recipes in Zimmerger magazine. What was it? The Dormouse Porter they won for last year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they will be joining us next week.
Yep. Thanks
on
for listening.
Fermentabad.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.